This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, May 24th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. Populism in Mexico has come roaring back as a new president there attempts to raise living standards while simultaneously pledging to militarize the National Guard to bring down the murder rate. Cato adjunct scholar Roberto Salinas Leon is president of the Mexico Business Forum.
The populism of today, I think, is much more a function of what Fukuyama has called identity and the politics of resentment. There is certainly an identity issue or an us versus them issue of those political classes and that segment of society that felt disenfranchised and that got completely fed up with the political establishment, especially after the former administration of Enrique Peña Nieto succumbed to a vicious cycle of impunity and just outright corruption and everywhere from the construction of pipelines to the assignment of credits to all kinds of crony arrangements with different corporations for public works projects and many other such cases that seem to reconfirm the fears that Andrés Manuel López Obrador had exploited in former presidential campaigns that he had engaged in, exploited the fears that this was corrupt and this was against the public and this was the rich versus the poor, the us versus them, the bad guys, the neoliberals, the conservatives versus the noble and just peoples of Mexico. And the vote was overwhelming. Last 1st of July of 2018, López Obrador won incredibly with a majority. This was had been unheard of in Mexico's nascent democratic transition because it's always been a three-party system, fundamentally a three-party system. And he basically did away with everyone and won a majority in Congress and won a majority in the Senate and a large majority in the state governorships. So from one day to the other, his party Morena, which means Movement of National Regeneration, was able to substantially capture virtually hegemonic control of Mexico's body politic.
So what, you know, the murder rate is obviously very high in Mexico. Living standards are a major concern in Mexico. He's promised to bring down the murder rate, raise living standards. In general, what's wrong with the way that he wants to go about doing that?
Well, he wants to significantly his effort in the first days and in his first days in office. Just barely 5 months since he took office. But since then, there's been a definite trend towards centralizing all decision making activity and basically centralizing it in one persona. That is a unipersonal method of going about political and economic business in Mexico. And whatever AMLO says is basically what is going to get done. And this is not just highly authoritarian, but also extraordinarily inefficient in terms of trying to implement major changes, whether it's in policy or develop an infrastructure project or simply run the bureaucracy on a day-by-day basis. If everything requires the seal of approval of the imperial leader, things are going to go bad very, very quickly. As far as a protection of a rule of law is concerned, there were no magic wands here, despite the promises that López Obrador had said. He had basically run on a platform that he believes in the nobility and the justness of the Mexican people. And as soon as an honest political coming in with an anti-corruption agenda would be president, that people would start behaving accordingly. And that's obviously not the case. Actually, the results for the first quarter of this year are the worst in Mexican history. Now, Obviously, he inherited a horrendous problem that has to do much more with effective rule of law. That's part of the problem. The other problem has been the war on drugs that has been waged for the past few years, and the fact that many regions in Mexico are the equivalent of failed states or failed regions, where basically government is not able to exercise its monopoly on the use of coercive force. So it's going to take much longer than a fleeting promise or some flashy proposition to do away from one morning to the other the problem of crime in Mexico and public security. There's a great deal of community work that has to be done. Now, another aspect that is very worrisome is that AMLO seems to think that by militarizing the police force and creating a national guard that would be military and not civil, that this would be part of the solution. And this is what he's done. And by doing this, I think that also leads the way to rethinking of whether this is just another version of the Bolivarian army or National Guard that Hugo Chavez built back in Venezuela. So there are causes of concern here, but clearly there are no magic wands to such serious problems. That's as far as security is concerned, and as far as poverty and living standards, well, to scare away investment, private investment, productive investment, that's going to be a major issue for López Obrador, because most of the policy proposals that he's advanced have basically done that. In other words, they have scared away all of those potential private investments that we're thinking about investing in the long term, whether it be in pipeline infrastructure or railroads or new manufacturing centers in Mexico or hotel chain hotel developments or whatever project that might come that implies a very long term commitment. They're really thinking about it twice now because of this idea of centralizing all decision making and basically being a subject, having your investment subordinated to the whimsy of the imperial ruler.
How much of the murder rate, obviously a top concern in Mexico, how much of that is driven by U.S. policy?
Well, it's driven by U.S. policy insofar as we haven't come to terms with a credible program of drug deprohibition. Drug deprohibition, in my opinion, or drug decriminalization, is not a magic wand. As Gary Becker once said, we have to test it. We have a conceptual credibility behind it, but we have to test it empirically. But let's give it a shot for maybe 10 years and see how it works. Early signs in the push towards marijuana legalization, I think, offer the first initial empirical evidence that this is for the good, and that this would go a long way towards removing the very large margins and the protections that the drug lords have been able to enjoy thanks to prohibition. It's not the only cause, as I say, but it's definitely part of the equation. So reducing consumption in the United States, or at least liberalizing the market, I think would be a very important step in the right direction. What is incredible is that in Mexico, whether you're a profoundly Catholic household mother, or whether you're a professor in university, or a taxi driver, or a soccer player, there seems to be a consensus everywhere that drug decriminalization is one of the main factors towards eventually reducing the issue of public insecurity.
Now, to the extent that the U.S. is the largest consumer of drugs, illegal drugs in the world, what difference would it really make if Mexico decided to proceed down a path of decriminalization or legalization?
No, that's why I say it would have to be, the United States would have to be part of the equation. So Mexico is going to proceed ahead with full-blown marijuana decriminalization anyhow. That's one of the good things, let us say, about the López Obrador administration, is that it is seriously considering such a move, which, again, opens up an entire new market and which will help also in partially mitigating some of the violence associated with marijuana distribution. A lot of these wars and a lot of the violence that is seen, especially the violence that is very much reported in the news, and the decapitations and the beheadings and the tortures and the lighting people on fire. Those are basically fights between gangs for turf. And that quarrel is born out of the need to protect certain distribution points throughout the country, not only for export into the United States, but also within the country itself. So I'm not saying that drug decriminalization, retail decriminalization in Mexico is going to make the difference, but it will be an important symbol of the type of step that we need to take, and hopefully will be taken in the United States as well.
I mean, is it concerning that some of the problems that Mexico is facing, as bad as some of them are, that there are so many things that seem to be going right in Mexico with respect to economic productivity, that it took such a small set of problems, relatively speaking, to have this country turn so populous so quickly?
Well, that's a great question, and I think a very good observation that is going to require a great deal of research. Whence cometh this populism? Again, my feeling is right now, and it may be just a feeling, my feeling is that is not really a large set of the Mexican population that all of a sudden turned populist. It's a rather large set that were infuriated, felt disenfranchised, and were very angry with the corruption and with the impunity of the former government. And they wanted change. Whether that change was right or left or center or up and down, they didn't care. They wanted a change that was out of the box, that was non-establishment, and that was credible. And López Obrador was able to seize on that opportunity, combined also with a long list of old-styled populist policies of extreme economic nationalism. Mexico is for the Mexicans. Very much the type of populism, of nativist populism that you saw the Trump administration or the Trump campaign successfully exploit to become president in 2016, or that you've seen the same phenomenon in Brazil with Jair Bolsonaro, or that you've seen in Europe with several of the populist movements. So it's not unique to Mexico, and not specifically a vote concerning economic policy. I think some of the decisions that have been taken have been very bad decisions for the future of Mexico. But he has yet to touch on perhaps the two most important achievements that Mexico has had in the past 25 years, which are the stability of the purchasing power of the peso. In other words, the climate of low inflation that Mexico has enjoyed after decades of devaluation, default, debt, and inflation. For the past two decades, basically since the tequila crisis in 1994, inflation came down after an initial significant spike after the peso devaluation and the tequila crisis. But then after that, basically, we created a whole generation or a couple of generations that were able to live under a climate of price stability. And that made an enormous difference as far as investment, as far as economic planning, economic calculation, what Ludwig von Mises would have called economic calculation, and as far as the prospects for long-term savings as well. And the other factor has been trade. The trade has exploded in Mexico and has shown that Mexico is able to play by the global rules of the game equally or sometimes better than most competitors. to the point today that trade vis-a-vis the rest of the world has more than quintupled since trade liberalization began. We export a formidable amount, but we also import a formidable amount. And that has all meant an increase in what we buy and what we sell abroad. And that's been a very, very significant achievement, not just in matters of trade, but also in the integration of supply chains. So we have automobiles, and we have television manufacturing, we have aerospace, and we also have software. And so it's become a very, very diversified economy as a result of trade liberalization. And to think that Mexico should go back to the good old days of petroleum dependence in the 1970s and the 1980s, that's not very good. That's not a very good sign. That type of nostalgia is not only fake news, or not only harbors a giant economic fallacy, but also behind the nostalgia, if it doesn't come, or if it's not complied with, there tends to be a strong authoritarian streak behind politicians who speak of nostalgia and a return to the past, precisely at a moment when we should be looking into the future.
You referred to this obliquely, but in terms of public safety, what role does the president have with respect to making use of the military for domestic problems? Of course, in the United States, there is a clear separation there. Does that separation exist in Mexico? And what prevents this president, if anything, from using the military for purely domestic concerns?
No, on the contrary, what he's done is there's an initiative that has been implemented to basically militarize the National Guard. So he's militarizing the police force. And that's a very bad thing for two reasons. First of all, it creates a set of loyal cronies with military power to enforce his wishes and his whims. But second of all, it also is confusing two problems. The military is supposed to address protection of our borders. And is not necessarily a solution or the most efficient solution to crime and punishment and to wholesale public security. You don't want soldiers going around murdering people for petty theft. There needs to be a much more efficient way of and a much more credible way of going about solving this this problem. So I think he's gotten himself into quite a dilemma, López Obrador, and I'm not sure exactly how this is going to play out or this is going to turn out, but he had promised during the election not to militarize the police force, and yet he went ahead and did exactly just that.
So you are the president of the Mexico Business Forum in Mexico City. You direct the Center for Latin America at the Atlas Network. What are the big concerns going forward with this leadership in Mexico for the prospect of, you know, remaining profitable, for being able to just do business?
Well, from a business standpoint, the greatest concern is that eventually toxic public policy the country can withstand so much. And if public policies are implemented suggesting cancellation of energy reform, or suggesting a return to protectionism, or suggesting perhaps the attack on autonomous institutions like the Supreme Court or the Energy Regulatory Commission, and then maybe the central bank, That's going to occasion a very significant problem for future investment possibilities in Mexico, and especially for the future of freedom in Mexico, hard-won freedoms. It is true that corruption and impunity have been rampant, but that has been mistakenly associated with some of the very important reforms that took place in the past 25 years. Today, López Obrador hides behind the word neoliberalism and the discontent with neoliberalism, and anything that is bad in Mexico is always Signaled out as being the cause, the result of a neoliberal policies of the past. And that, again, that polarization of debate, that us versus them, the good guys versus the bad guys, that's going to lead us nowhere as far as the type of dialogue and the public debate that Mexico needs in order to come out ahead and think about a brighter future. Instead of thinking of greater integration with the United States, here we have one president talking about the need to erect a wall with Mexico. And on the other hand, we have one that is saying, well, we would welcome economic nationalism and autarky as the new model to follow. That is definitely, we know from evidence, we know from thousands of years of evidence and just conceptual argument as well, is going to lead to lower living standards and a great deal of economic shock in an age where capital mobility is far, far faster than it used to be just 20, 30 years ago.
Roberto Salinas Leon is president of the Mexico Business Forum. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.